Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, we continue our series of survivor stories with guest host Peter LaMoth, who's a cancer survivor himself. And Peter is joined this week by fellow survivor Janet Brown.
It's terrific to have you with us, and I thought we could begin by first talking a little bit about who you are, a little bit about your background before we get into your cancer experience.
Okay, my name is Janet. I live in Old Saybrook. I was 48 when I was diagnosed. I'm almost 52 now. I have three children. They're in their early 20s. I've been married to my high school sweetheart for 28 years. And before diagnosis, I was a preschool teacher with a degree in special education, but I was teaching preschool in Old Saybrook.
Terrific. So let's talk a little bit about the last 4 years. And can we begin with you telling us about your diagnosis?
I have stage 4 non-small cell adenocarcinoma lung cancer. It had spread, started in my right lung and spread to 3 spots on my spine and to the pons area of my brain.
And when was this exactly? When were you?
I was diagnosed December 22nd, 2006.
Okay. And what was your initial reaction when you got this news?
That is such a hard thing to remember, to bring up back to my memory, because it was such a horrible, horrible experience. I was all alone when I was told. It came totally out of the blue. I had always thought I might have cancer at some point in my life because my grandmother did, my mother did, my aunt did. But lung cancer, never. At 48 years old, never. The whole world went black. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't talk. I just kept wanting to throw up. I just want to die right this second. I can't do this. And then I just kept thinking, I can't do this to my children. And it just, a million emotions all flooded in.
And where did this happen? Were you in the clinic with your doctor? Or?
I was in an emergency room. What had happened was I had gone to my GP because I had back pain. And she sent me in for an MRI and a CAT scan and then called me up a couple hours later and said, I want you to go meet a neurological doctor. Go meet him at the emergency room. She didn't tell me why. I got to the emergency room and they started asking me a million questions. And they kept saying, do you smoke? Do you smoke? Do you work in a toxic environment? And so I finally said, why am I here? And the doctor just blurted out, you have lung cancer. And so that's how I found out.
Wow. And what did you do next with that information? You went home and told your husband? Did you?
Well, what happened was it was pretty bad in my spine, the spots. My spine was compromised. My husband was in the waiting room. They had not let him in. So the first thing I said was, can you please go get my husband? And he came in and they wanted to admit me. So we talked to the doctor. He said, you need to be admitted. Your spine is very compromised. And then I said, but is this fast? Is lung cancer fast? Am I going to be gone in a few months? And he said, not a few months, maybe a year. And I said to him, so you're telling me this will be my last Christmas? And he said, very likely. And I said, I'm not spending it in the hospital. So we checked ourselves out, went home and didn't tell anybody. Made it through Christmas and went back to the hospital the day after Christmas and okay. Spent the week.
And who did you meet with, and what were some of the next steps that occurred because it was so aggressive?
I originally met with a neurological doctor. He was originally going to do surgery on my spine, take out the tumors, and fuse my spine together. Then they found it in my brain. I had more CAT scans, more MRIs, more X-rays, and they found that it had spread to my brain. So the plan changed. Instead, they just did a biopsy and started my schedule for radiation because they wanted to get me in treatment as soon as possible. So I was there about a week.
So can you say, tell us about the type of treatments that you received over the course of the ensuing, say, months?
Okay, I started with radiation on January 2nd, 2007. I didn't start at Yale. I started over at St. Raphael's. Radiation lasted until February 15th. I had radiation to my spine and to my brain. On February 15th, I moved over to Yale and started on a drug called Tarceva, which is an oral chemotherapy drug. I've been on that since. And then every 3 months now, it was every month, I have an infusion of Zometa, which is a calcium supplement.
Can you say a little bit more about Tarceva, why that particular drug was selected for you?
Tarceva was selected for me, thankfully, because I came to Yale. Yale was my second opinion. Dr. Scott Gettinger was my second opinion, and when I came to see him, he asked if I had been tested for the EGFR mutation.
Right.
Get those letters
those
right.
Are hard.
And I hadn't, so he tested my biopsy. And I have a mutation on my genes that the drug Tarceva works especially well with. So instead of going through the regular chemo infusions, I went right to the Tarceva.
So after your diagnosis, you were told that this was stage four, that you might not see a second Christmas. Time was of the essence, and yet you went and had a second opinion. What drove that decision, and can you say some more about that for us?
I hate to sound curt, but it seems like a no-brainer. I was given a diagnosis that I had an incurable disease, and it was going to kill me. I had never met this man before, this first oncologist. Why would I trust him with my life? So it just only seemed sensible to go speak to somebody else. My sister happens to work at Yale, so she got me an appointment with Dr. Gettinger, and I also went down to Sloan Kettering and had an appointment with them. And they agreed with Dr. Gettinger's plan of action, and so I stayed here at Yale. I think you just know if you're not clicking with a doctor. My first oncologist pretty much just said, this is the treatment plan I do with my patients. Dr. Gettinger said, this is the treatment plan I'm going to do with you as an individual. And I just really appreciated that.
So with these targeted therapies, the Tarceva drug that you're taking for the EGFR mutation, this is really treating your cancer and not just stage
right.
four lung cancer.
It's treating my cancer with my mutation. And there's more targeted therapies coming out that are treating, you know, I have some friends online that are getting different targeted therapies that are treating their mutations. So more things are being developed all, you know.
Had you heard of targeted therapies before or gene
no.
mutations or?
I thought you got cancer, you did chemo.
Right.
That's what I thought would happen.
And I think the trends now are towards personalized cancer
right.
therapies so that you are not among only a group of lung cancer patients, but that your lung cancer is being treated in a personalized way that is specific to you.
And the success is, you know, is just wonderful. So.
Can you say a little bit about the effects of Tarceva and what began to happen over the ensuing weeks and months?
Well, there's no sign of cancer progression in me, so it's pretty much stopped the growth. It has some lovely side effects that I've learned to live with. Tarceva is, you think you're just taking this little pill, and I look at it every night and I think, how can this little pill be stopping the cancer? But it seems to be. You know, I've had lost my hair. It gives you a terrible rash that happened on my scalp and caused my hair to fall out. It gives you conjunctivitis-like symptoms on your eyes. sores on your nail beds, and pretty much constant diarrhea. So it's not an easy drug. I think it's much easier than traditional chemo, but it does have its side effects. I think when people ask me how I'm feeling, the cancer I could completely forget about. It's the side effects from the Tarceva that make you remember that you're sick.
So this type of diagnosis and what you have gone through since it are particularly difficult for you, but I imagine it's going to be very difficult for your family and for your children.
I'm not a father, so I can't say, but I know the first thing that comes to a mother's mind is her children. I lost my mother when I was in my early 30s, so the thought of my children losing their mother when they were in their early 20s was devastating. I just kept thinking, how can I do this to them? I'm ruining their lives. It's been very hard. They're very strong kids, and we have decided to laugh about it and joke about it, and some people are a little put off by us, but it's the way we get through. They've been very strong and very supportive, but I still really worry. My oldest daughter lives in Boston. She's got a career. I don't want her to have to stop that to come and take care of me if things get bad. My middle child just started medical school. I mean, the last thing she needs is the stress of her mother. And my son is just about to graduate college. So it's very difficult. They're not at a point where I feel they're settled, and they're at a point where they still need their mother. So I need to still fight.
You don't ever stop being a mother despite a diagnosis yeah. like this. How have you individually and perhaps with your husband and then your kids too, sort of begun to maybe live your life a little bit differently since this diagnosis? Has that happened?
My life, I think I've lived much differently. I did stop working. I taught three-year-olds, and that's exhausting for any 50-year-old. 50-year-old on Tarceva, it was really exhausting. So I did stop working. I wanted to be able to have the time and the energy to spend with my husband. He comes home for lunch every day. I'd like to be there. I wanted to be able to visit with my kids. So I did stop working. I've started volunteering, so I'm busy, but on my own terms. I'm much more patient with people because I realize you never know what somebody's going through. So if a cashier is grumpy at me, I don't grump back at her. I just kind of let it go. And I really live each day. Yeah. I'm not climbing mountains, and I'm not bungee jumping, and I'm not traveling the world. But every day, even if I don't leave my house, I live. And I enjoy it, and I enjoy all the little things. And I think as a family, we've become much closer. It's odd to say, but it's really been a blessing, and we've become a very close-knit group of five.
It sounds like, you've had a very, always lived a very full life and have embraced things in life. And we know that a cancer diagnosis affects more than just the patient and their family, but also their friends and in many cases, their community. Can you say a little bit about how your friends, your neighbors, people that you've known for your entire life took this news and how they responded?
Friends are amazing. And, immediately meals started coming in. People were cleaning my house. People were coming by with a glass of wine just to chat. My friends have really been behind me, supportive of me. My church has been behind me. The nursery school where I work sent us on a cruise. I mean, people have been really, really, really kind. Some people have backed off. Some people don't know how to deal with it, and I totally understand that. Sickness is hard, so you can understand that, but they've been wonderful. Everybody's been truly wonderful.
Good. We're going to take a short break now for a medical minute, so please stay tuned to hear more about Janet Brown's story.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year and nearly 200,000 nationwide. But there is new hope for these women. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. In 2010, more women are learning to live with this disease than ever before. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments available to patients. A potential breakthrough in treating chemotherapy-resistant breast cancer is now being studied at Yale, combining BSI-101, a PARP inhibitor, with the chemotherapy drug irinotecan. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. I am Peter Lamoth, and I'm joined today by Janet Brown, and we are discussing her story of cancer survivorship. Janet, we left before the break, we were talking a little bit about how your close friends and family responded to your cancer. And in the public at large, I think it's safe to say that there's a certain stigma attached to a lung cancer diagnosis. And I think there's a lot that we can say about that. So I'd like to begin with your thoughts about that.
Lung cancer is a cancer that it's very hard to tell people what you have because the reaction is not usually hugs and warm fuzzies. 95% of the people who I've told I have lung cancer, the first words out of their mouth are, "Do you smoke?" And that's a really harsh question for a couple reasons. First of all, what does it matter? And if I said yes, what would your answer be? What would your response be? I didn't smoke, but even people who do smoke don't deserve lung cancer. Nobody deserves that. And because it's got this negative stigma and people seem to feel that you brought it on yourself, it doesn't get the funding that it deserves. It's the biggest cancer killer out there. It kills more people every year than breast, prostate, colon, and pancreatic cancer combined. And yet it gets a really, really small fraction of the funding. The money that is raised usually gets put towards smoking cessation programs instead of research. Tarceva was discovered with research dollars, and we need more research dollars to find more targeted therapies. So the negative stigma is very hard, and it's hard to have a cancer that people have no sympathy for.
Why do you think this stigma exists?
I think it's, in one way, it's, you know, the media and you know, cigarettes are bad. And I think in another way, it makes people feel safe to think it's cigarettes.
So for as important as smoking cessation is, it's the research into the disease after it affects people, you're saying, is so critical,
right?
And is being shortchanged.
Now they're saying maybe 65% of the people who are newly diagnosed with lung cancer either never smoked at all or quit smoking decades ago. So even though it's important to stop smoking for many reasons, not just cancer, for your heart, for your general health, stopping smoking is not going to stop lung cancer. It's happening whether you're a smoker or not.
Right. There are many, many environmental factors, genetic factors, as you've said, with the EGFR mutation that that can affect this. Those are very good points. So during the course of this journey that you've been on, have you reached out to or joined support groups? Have you come into contact with other cancer patients, whether they be lung or another cancer? And how has that, if you have, how has that helped you?
Yes, when I first, was sitting home with the radiation and everything, I got on the computer and I joined an online support group through a group called Lungevity. And it's the kind of support group where you can send in questions and everybody who has experience with it answers it. And there's also just a chat room where we could just chat. And I made some very good friends through that. it got very difficult for me because I also lost some very good friends through that. And then on Facebook, I have become friends with cancer survivors and caregivers that I found through Facebook groups. When I first started at Yale, Irene Scanlon, who runs the lung cancer support group at Yale, came up to me after every appointment and said, I just want to let you know that we have a support group. She always said it very gently, and I always very politely said, no, thank you. I didn't think that that would be for me, face-to-face talking with people. I thought it would be too awkward. But after losing quite a few friends on the online group and with all the worries going through my head about my children, the guilt about leaving work and not helping out with the, you know, with the family finances, and then just feeling very, very alone, I finally joined the beginning of the summer, the support group at Yale.
Of this summer, okay.
Yes.
And what has that experience been like for you?
It is wonderful. It is a wonderful group of people. It is not at all what I expected. There's probably 20 of us, maybe more, survivors and caregivers. And everybody is there to help each other. We laugh a lot. We cry some. It's wonderful to have somebody verify what you've been thinking. You'll think that you're the only one that thinks that way, and somebody will come out and say it at support group, and it's a good feeling. With the side effects from the Tarceva, there's other people there that are on the same drug. We help each other out. We give each other names of doctors and drugs that we've tried. We just were interviewed by a journalist from the New Haven Register, and she was shocked when she came in. I think she expected to see a group of sad-faced people, and she walked in, and we were all just laughing and having a nice time with each other.
So have you, now that you've lived with this disease for a few years, have you found yourself, it sounds to me that you've moved through or beyond just dealing with it and focusing on it to reaching out to other people for help, and now it sounds like you're giving help. Have you got into any advocacy or fundraising or things like that in lung cancer?
No, I really haven't. My daughter and I walked in the Boston Lung Cancer Walk in November, and that's the first thing I have done. Most of it has been just helping people on the support lines and being in a support group. But I really haven't gotten into any of that yet.
So have you gone, or perhaps both of these things are happening at the same time in your support group, have you not only sought advice but sort of found yourself giving advice and comforting other people?
Oh, certainly. When new people come in to either the support group or on the online group, they're so lost, and you remember that, and you remember how scared you were, and so it's important to tell them it gets better, and it's hard for them to believe that, but and to give them advice what to do when they go to the doctor's appointment, what to ask, and just to let them know that here I am. It's 4 years later. It can happen.
Right.
So
in this particular group, because I think that not only do our patients, clearly those that are diagnosed, affected by the cancer, but and are surviving it, in my definition of survivorship from the moment of diagnosis, but also those people who are closest to them. You know, I think of my own case with Hodgkin's disease almost 5 years ago, and I think my wife and son and many of my family members survived that cancer too. So thinking across the cancer disease spectrum, what advice or what would you say to that cancer survivorship community based on your own experience? What types of tips or suggestions for dealing or not dealing? Sometimes it's better to just shut it down if you have to in the cancer experience.
For the patient, I think I would say you're not used to doing it, but you have to put yourself first. Stick up for yourself, fight. Don't give up hope. do everything you can and research. Bring people with you to the doctor's appointments. That's so important because the doctor is throwing terms at you and numbers at you, and to have somebody there with a pen and pencil writing it all down. When people offer help, take the help. You feel really funny about it at first, but somebody reminded me that that's a gift to them, that they don't know what else to do, and you're helping them out by accepting it. Accept the help. Take care of yourself. When you need a nap, take your nap. When you don't feel up to going to a party or doing what's supposed to be done that day, don't do it. Put yourself first. For the family, you know, it's hard, but they have to take care of themselves too. And they can't live their life around your disease. And I know that's very hard for them, but they have to remember to take care of themselves and not let themselves get worn down worrying about it and to live their lives.
I think for patients, talking about their cancer when they're able to is very therapeutic. And you sound like you've always, if not been at ease talking about it, it hasn't been something that you've been unable to talk about. And but what always strikes me as interesting is what other people say to you about your cancer or cancer in general. And I won't bore you with some of the things that I had heard, but I think what was most meaningful to me was what people closest to me had to say. And while my son wasn't old enough when I was diagnosed first to have a conversation about it, we have in the intervening years, and my wife and my family as well. And I'm just curious, say a little bit about what you heard from your children and what it may have taught you about them or how you raised them.
My children all have reacted very differently. And when I was first diagnosed, my son couldn't even get out of bed. And now I find out that he talks to his friends. His friends write to me now to offer support or something they've read. He calls them with the good news when I've had a good report. So that just makes me feel so good. My oldest daughter has always been the one who needed me the most. And when I was first diagnosed, that got even more strong, where she couldn't leave my side. And that was frightening to me. But she's grown so much, and I know she can do this now. And she still has a hard time talking about it. She doesn't like to talk about it, but she will. And then my middle daughter, who people who know her will be surprised, because she seems very fun-loving and easygoing, is the sensible child. And she's started medical school, and we talk about it all the time. And I actually call her up and ask her, like, tell me exactly what the Tarceva is doing, and she'll explain it to me. And I think it's wonderful that she's doing this, because I think she'll be a huge comfort to her brother and sister. As if things get bad, she'll be able to explain things to them, and it'll be good.
So we talked a little bit about the perhaps change in perspective on your life that the cancer diagnosis had, and you're living with the disease now. So, but my question is, you seem to me a person who has boundless energy and optimism, and it wouldn't strike me, even though we've only known each other for a little while, but it wouldn't strike me as unusual that you have a really long-term plan for life. And I'm just curious as to how you look at the rest of your life in front of you and what you want to accomplish, and whether cancer will always be a part of your life or is just part of this part of your life.
I have strong faith. And when I got cancer, I said to God, I need to see my children settled. And I meant by that, I want to see them married. I want to see grandchildren. but I'm not going to ask for all that because I know not to ask for too much. I want to see my son graduate high school. He graduates college in May, and I tell everybody I'm going to be the loudest mother at that ceremony. But I did. I wanted to see my children settled. And then as little things happen in life, the recession and breakups with long-term boyfriends, I say, okay, this is good. A little unsettled is good. It'll keep me alive longer. So I don't plan on going anyplace soon. I'm having too much fun, and I have things to do, and I've always wanted to be a grandmother, and my children have no intention of making that happen anytime soon, so I'm sticking around.
Janet Brown and Peter LaMoth are cancer survivors. If you have questions or would like to share your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.